is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Our goal is to help a kid play, get some more exposure, and return them to their high school team a better basketball player. And that's it.
Clint Hordeman is the Director of Player Development for Select Basketball, an AAU program based in Garden City, Idaho, and serving the Northwest. After playing at Boise State University, Clint began his coaching career at the University of Nevada, Reno, under Trent Johnson. He also worked for the Idaho Stampede of the NBA's Developmental League before starting with Select Basketball in 2003. Clint graduated from Boise State in 2001 after four seasons on the Bronco basketball team, including a run to the Big West Conference Championship game. After attending Clackamas Community College as a freshman, Clint walked on at Boise State and earned a full scholarship for his three remaining seasons. Be prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Clint Hordeman, Director of Player Development for Select Basketball. Hey Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is JP Clark, former NBA assistant coach with the Celtics and Clippers, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Be prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Clint Hordeman, Director of Player Development for Select Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkle tonight, and we are pleased to welcome to the podcast the Director of Player Development for Select Basketball, Clint Hordeman. Clint, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here.
We are excited to be able to have you on, learn about all the great things that you've been able to do in the game of basketball. I want to go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about how you got into the game, what some of your first experiences were.
Well, I was very fortunate. My dad was a high school basketball coach. My dad's in the Idaho Hall of Fame. He's won three state championships in Idaho. And so I grew up in a gym. You know, he would take me to practice, and as young as I could, grew up in the gym, going to games. And so I just fell in love because my dad's one of my very best friends. We've always had a great relationship. And, I just love the smell of the gym, the ball bouncing. One of the best parts, I think, as a kid was my dad's players were always so cool to me. They made me feel special. And I love that camaraderie. I loved just being around them. And I fell in love right out the gate, man. So it just blossomed from there. So I just always wanted to be in the gym. I spent all my time and just wanted to be in the gym, wanted to get better. I being fortunate that my dad could work with me a lot, coach me at a lot of different points in time. He was a terrific blend of giving me advice, being honest with me, but really never, chewing my butt or overstepping his bounds. He was the master of just saying just the right stuff at all the right times. So that's kind of my first introduction for sure.
Anybody who has coached their own kid or been coached by their parent knows that that's a really difficult line to walk. I know I can speak to that. My son is a sophomore this year, And it's difficult. It's difficult to walk that line between being a dad and wanting to help them get better and just making sure that you don't go too far in one direction. So it's great that you were able to have that kind of relationship with your dad. When you think back to that time, did you have, you mentioned your dad's players, did you have a favorite player, like somebody that really was your guy that you looked up to for whatever reason, whether they were a really good player or whether the way they treated you? Just what do you remember about that, a specific guy that you remember?
You know, what's funny is, so there was the guys that were the great players, right? The best players of the team, the guys that are dunking and doing, you know, throwing lobs, doing all this stuff. But some of the guys that were the best, like the Bart Leeches and some of these other guys, they were just, they were awesome because they just made me laugh. And they would like, you know, they would have me jump into the ball handling drills with them and, you know, weren't scared to, you know, let us jump into layup lines and stuff like that. And not necessarily, those were like Bart, for instance, is just a guy I'm friends with to this day that, it was more just just the spirit that he had, you know what I mean? That just made it really fun, you know what I mean? And so, gosh, but there's a ton of those guys. There were so many, the Mike Chatterdins, the Jeff Sainers that were just really good to me and my brother. And just, again, made it really special.
So when you're looking up to those guys, I know this is a conversation that we've had with a lot of high school coaches. And I think one of the things that, when I think about what makes a good high school program is kids looking up to those players who are older than them and eventually wanting to be one of those players. So when you think about that, obviously your dad's relationship and impact on you and getting you in the gym and having that opportunity. But when you think about the impact that those players had on you, do you think that that influenced you as much or even as much as your dad did, just seeing those guys be like, man, someday I want to be out there in the layup line just like they were listening to the pep band or whatever it might be?
Yes. And maybe this is a unique answer, but I think it just, more than anything, it just made the gym a very special, safe place for me, where I knew that I could, you could never feel bad in the gym. Like, we just had that feeling, you know what I mean? Like, I just,
yep,
on the way to the gym, you know, we'd stop and get donuts. On the way back, we'd, you know what I mean? Like, the whole experience made just basketball Saturdays with my dad just like made me look forward to it all week long. You know what I mean? Like, because obviously it's a winter sport, and in this, and then during Christmas break, just being able to go in almost every day, it just made it just like a holiday every time I could go. Because, you know, again, my dad didn't put any pressure on me to like, hey, I need you to get a bunch of shots up or this and that. Most of the time I was a really little kid, but it was like being in the gym, you know, you fell in love with it. Like I said, you mean, Boise High School is where my dad coached, and I think of that gym, I can smell it. And I can hear from the downstairs, it's a really old gym. I can remember the ball, the way it would sound when it's bouncing when you're in the locker room and all this. And so it just, again, it just became, going to the gym was just a happy place. So it was always, that's how you get better, right? Hey, you want to go to the gym?
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's go. I'm there. I mean, my high school coach would hate this, but like, we used to find ways to break into the gym when nobody was around, learn how to jimmy the lights on. Maybe he knew, maybe he didn't, but he knew we weren't going to do anything stupid. We were just going in there to get shots up, you know, and it may be midnight, but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that safe, wonderful place. And if for a junkie, that's where you wanted to be. It just developed that love and passion. So
when did you realize that the type of access you had as a coach's son was unique? Because obviously when you're 7, 8 years old, it's just your reality. You're not really thinking about, hey, I got access to the gym. When did you start to realize that, hey, I had it pretty special and a lot of my buddies maybe didn't have that same kind of access?
Boy, I think we learn everything after it happens, right? Like,
yep.
I didn't know any different. You know what I mean? Like, my dad retired from coaching when I was probably, I don't know, 14 years old. But I still knew how to get in the, now I can figure out ways to get in every gym. I knew how to get in my spot. And then when you play college ball, I mean, they want you to have access. So you always have access. But then as you start to coach and you're finding that now it's a little bit more difficult and, you know, you can always, I'm a big, hey, just go outside and play guy. You know what I mean? Because you can do that anytime. but you still, it's not the same. You know what I mean? You want to be in that gym. You want to hear that ball, you know, the be in that situation. And so, it's probably when I was starting to really coach and going, geez, you know, it's hard for, I want to practice 3-4 days a week. I can only get in there once, twice, you know, and then you're like, geez, Louise, these kids, I never remembered having that problem. You know, you think, but I never remembered having that problem or this problem. So it was definitely later. But man, it makes me think back and go, geez, you said it perfectly. Like, man, I was even luckier than I even thought. I didn't even realize that everybody else didn't have the same opportunity. Cause you said also, man, when I was 10, didn't know any different. I thought everybody had that great experience.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that access, when you talk to a coach's kid, that's one of the biggest things that they always talk about is just, hey, I was at practice when I was 6 years old and I was the ball boy and I was out there and doing this and the players kind of took me under their wing. And it's just, I think it's such a unique experience that so many kids don't get that opportunity. And those that do, I think you, like you said, you don't realize it in the moment, but after the fact, when you look back, you're always like, wow, that was really what kind of got me off to a great start. When you think back to your own high school career, do you have a favorite memory, something that stands out for you?
Winning state championship when I was a junior was really, really special. Obviously, I was in kind of a unique situation. They built a new school and it was going to open my senior year. But there was a group of us that had all been together for a long time that had played, you know, with my dad coaching and this and that. And that my junior year, we went 26-0 in one state. And just, you know, when that horn went off and we had done it, just the special moment. And it was like, obviously it was really cool because it was, you know, you won state, but it was because I did it with my friends. I did it with the people that I really cared about. And that's what made it really, really special. That would be my favorite. Obviously that's an easy answer. You know, I can give you a lot of little whatever along the way, but that's the pinnacle, right?
Absolutely. So when this new school got built, did then that school merge? Did you guys merge with another school and combine? Is that what happened?
Yeah, correct. So Okay. Basically, if you were in the boundaries of the new high school, you had to go to that high school. If you were in the other boundaries, because we weren't full, you could choose to come. And some kids did and some kids didn't. You know, it just kind of depended. But it was a big split, you know. So –
man, that had to be tough. Holy cow.
It was. I wanted to stay. Obviously, we just came off a great season. One of my very best friends was actually a Division I player, and he stayed, and I left because I had to. I didn't have any choice. And so it was kind of fun to create. And at first, it was kind of devastating, but the reality is that it really did give me some new opportunities to be a leader. It gave me new opportunities to, I know it sounds crazy, but like that split allowed me to be more mature when I got to college because, you know, I played with there's only two guys, me and another kid that came from Centennial. Everybody else was new. They came from Meridian or wherever. So, I mean, I was kind of trying to step into a totally different situation. Just like, again, when you go to college, right? You're there and you don't know anybody. You're like, I got to prove myself today. So that was actually, in hindsight, I think became kind of a blessing, even though it would have been really fun to win state twice. We had a great year. We won districts. We beat Centennial in the district championship, which was another great memory. So we had a great season my senior year. It was a unique, but was great. And I'll tell you right now, I loved the coach. That was a different coach, and I loved my coach at Centennial, but the new coach was a different voice, and I really loved him as well. So it did work out in the end.
When you think about your own journey to coaching, how much impact did it have having two different high school coaches, and what have you taken from each one of those guys? Because obviously, as you said, you love both of them. Sounds like maybe in different ways that they each had different strengths or things that you really enjoyed when you played for them. So what are some things that stand out about each one of them?
Well, I think one is that, so my first coach, we knew really well because again, we had been to camps for years, right? Like he was the coach at Centennial for a long period of time. So we would go to camps there and we would, we would, you know, we did summer leagues together, and we, you know, we worked our way up the ladder, so to speak, there at Centennial. So got to know him really well. It was really comfortable, because we had a lot of success, and, TA was just a really nice, he was just a really good guy, just a super nice human being. And then the coach that we got at Eagle, Coach Dennis, was, Kerfoot, was just a lot more hard-nosed and direct. Was a little bit like, you know, he could chew your butt now. You know, he was just different, right? And so, and I liked that too. My dad was more that way. And like I said, my dad never coached me in high school. He retired so he could essentially watch me and my brother play. Like, he was like, listen, I'm not chewing up my winners. Right. I don't want my kids traveling over here to a different school, whatever. So he had retired. So, it was great. I learned a lot from both of them. Again, like, the one thing I really respected about Coach Kerfoot was he cared about me a lot. So it was okay for him to chew my butt when I made mistakes. Right. And that taught me a lot, you know. Coach Eiperspach was just great because, again, I knew he loved on us. He cared for us. He really let us, you know, play a little bit more free and open, you know, and all that. But they were both awesome coaches and I think they really did get a lot out of me. So I just really appreciate both of them.
Yeah, it's interesting that when you think about the types of coaches that players play for, that players like to play for, typically, I guess I think of somebody who likes, oh, I like the quote-unquote players coach style, or I like the guy that's going to maybe get on me a little bit more. It's interesting that you got exposed to both at the high school level, which again gives you a perspective of how you may eventually want to be when you're a coach, because you can take bits and pieces, the things that fit your personality, and eventually mold them into your coaching style. Hey coaches, Jason and I here at the Hoopheads Pod know you're always looking to learn and grow. So we've teamed up with Matt Smith from United Basketball Clinics to bring you our first ever Buckeye Coaches Clinic. The clinic will be held at Olmsted Falls High School in Olmsted Falls, Ohio on Saturday, September 25th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can get registered by visiting hoopheadspod.com and clicking on Buckeye Coaches Clinic from the main menu. We've put together a great lineup of speakers for coaches at all levels of the game. Bring your whole staff and get $10 off each registration. Visit hoopheadspod.com for more info and join us for a great day of basketball at the Buckeye Coaches Clinic. Were you thinking about coaching through your high school? And then we could talk a little bit about your college career, but were you thinking about coaching at that point? Obviously your dad was a coach. So was coaching something that was always in the back of your mind, or were you kind of the mindset that I'm a player at this point and coaching really never crossed your radar until you got done playing? How'd you approach that piece of it?
I 100% was the latter. I was a player. All I was thinking about was the next rep, the next whatever, you know what I mean? Like my approach was, it didn't even dawn on me that I would coach. I mean, I kind of was like, oh yeah, you know, I would say a student of the game, but I was more like,
from a player perspective.
I was totally a player perspective. It did not dawn on me to like, I was taught by my dad to just do what your coach tells you to do. He's got your best interest in mind. Just do what he says. Do you get what I'm saying? So I was just out there trying to do, you know, I was trying to win basketball games and trying just to be the best player I could. I didn't even cross my mind to be a coach at that point in time.
Yeah, I could totally relate. That's how I was. I think I was a kid who loved basketball, but at the same time, I always thought of myself as a player. I never once thought of myself as a coach or a coach in training. It was always like, I'm just going to take my playing career as long as I can take it. And I think I probably still feel that way, honestly, even though I don't play anymore. I probably still feel more like a player sometimes than I do a coach. Tell me a little bit about your recruitment to college, a little bit about your journey, because you have an interesting journey. You go to a community college as a freshman, then you walk on at Boise State, and you end up playing there for the remaining 3 years on scholarship. So I'm sure that your story has some relevance to the kids that you're involved with at Select. So just give us a little bit of the background of your college journey.
So I learned the brutalities of recruiting immediately. So I, as a senior, I had been recruited by Coach Cravens at University of Idaho. I had verbally committed to play at Idaho, was gearing up and excited to go be a Vandal. My dad and my mom are from Moscow, both went to the University of Idaho, and my brother was at University of Idaho as a student. And about 2 weeks before national signing day, they fired Coach Cravens and hired Kermit Davis. And so I went up to visit Coach Davis to see what, you know, we're, you know, basically be like, we're still go. And Coach Davis had recruited, I mentioned one of my really good friends that was at Centennial to Utah State. And that's where Coach Davis came from. And so he gave the scholarship that was going to me to him.
So welcome to college basketball.
It was a very brutal 2 days of my life, or a day of my life. You know, I'm like, holy crap, what am I going to do now? And so, you know, I had some Division II. I had some other recruitment from some other Division I schools, but I had called those guys and like, listen, we filled your spot. And I totally understood that, because this was now April, you know. And back then, recruiting happened a lot earlier than it does now, by leaps and bounds, in my opinion. Just in the sense that, you know, people play, you know what spots. There's so few transfers that you know what spots that you were going to have. So we can talk. We can talk about that different. Now there's the transfers and blah blah blah. Because most kids just went there all 4 years. Said, listen, I know in 3 years we're going to lose three seniors, and they can fill the spots. You're starting to fill them, right? Anyways, it's different now. But so I didn't really have a place to go. I had some Division II schools and some others that were in with offers, and I just was like, listen, I want to pursue the D1 dream. I had it in my grasp, and it slipped away. So I went to a junior college, had a really good experience there, played really well. And Boise State was recruiting me, but I was basically like, it's time for me to move on. So they said, walk on, and then we'll scholarship you. If you come here and play your butt off, we'll scholarship you the next 3 years, because we don't have any scholarships for you, but we do have one for the following year. You know what I mean? Like I was just saying. Right. So I walked on, you know, it redshirted. It was fantastic. Redshirting, I think, is every kid should do it. And got my school right, got my body right, got my mind right, to play. And then played 3 years at Boise State, and it was awesome. You know, it worked out great. You know, I had a very kind of unique role, but I embraced the heck out of it, loved it, and away we went. So yeah, I had a great experience, and it was great.
Great arena there.
It's awesome.
I love the arena. That's probably one of my favorite. So I have two favorites. Boise State's one, and the other one is the Roundhouse, which is now middle. Tennessee Chattanooga. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank. Cool. Tennessee Chattanooga. Both really, really cool arenas. Those are probably my two favorite places that I play, just in terms of the building.
How did I know that before you, Mike? It's because of Terrell Owens. Is that the only reason I knew Tennessee to Chattanooga? That's where he went to school. Did you know that, Mike?
I don't know if I knew that. I should have known it from Shulman, but
that's how I knew it. But oh well.
But anyway. Yeah, so I don't know, for whatever reason, I was getting my Tennessees all mixed together. But nonetheless, Tennessee Chattanooga, we played in a tournament there when I was, I think, a junior maybe. But anyway, Boise State's arena, very cool, really a cool place to play. So you get done, what's the plan from there when your playing career ends?
Yeah, so I kind of just got to the point where, honestly, like, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to take a break from hoops. You know what I mean? I had some small contract opportunities overseas that were just like playing for peanuts. And I'm like, I'm ready to kind of see what the next chapter is. So, I actually moved 1 year before that. Just let me backtrack one step. So I go to California, and I get a job that I don't love. I think like every other, you know, person that graduates, but they're trying to figure out what the heck they want to do. But then backtracking, when I was my senior year at Boise State, my coach Kerfoot at Eagle called me and said, hey, would you have any interest in coaching a little kind of local AAU team that will just stay local and play some tournaments and this and that, but you know what kind of offense I like to run and defense I like to run and all that good stuff. And so it really helped out the program if you wanted to come and do that. And so me and a friend of mine went and started coaching that spring before I graduated, and I had a blast. So I kind of got a taste of the bug right then. Fast forward, go to San Diego, didn't love it. An extremely long story, probably. I mean, it's a unique story, but University of Nevada, Reno, Trent Johnson. I'm not sure if you guys know who Trent Johnson is. Trent's actually the coach at Northridge. He was at LSU. He was at Stanford, Nevada, etc. My dad, he was played at Boise State, and he was like a security guard at Micron, which is a tech company in town. And my dad got him to be the sophomore B coach at Boise High School for him. And it was his first coaching job. And so he worked from the sophomore B at Boise High School all the way to the head coach at LSU and Stanford. Anyways, when he was at Nevada, I said, hey, you know, do you have a spot on your staff so I can maybe try and see if college basketball is what I want to do? So I go to Nevada, Reno, and I do that for probably 9 months. And it was probably the best 9 months of basketball, like, knowledge that I've ever had, just because I'm on the back end now. And Coach Johnson is just a wealth of knowledge. He was giving me like everything you could possibly imagine as far as college coaching, recruiting, you know, what it takes to get out of your players. What are we looking for in our recruits? And for him too, going back to what we talked about earlier, literally trying to beat the player out of me and saying, you're not a player, you're a coach now. Get it out of your system. Stop saying, this is how I do it. This is how we should have done it. This is how I would have closed out there. I would have blah, blah, blah. Stop saying it. And so I did it for 9 months, but I also realized a couple things about college coaching was that it just wasn't for me. Like the travel, I wanted to have a family. I knew that early. The travel and all that. And I get people can mix them and do a great job as dads and husbands and whatever. But I just was like, man, this is not exactly what I wanted to sign up for. So then I took a job at the Idaho Stampede, which is the NBA. It's a G League team. It was just a minor league team that was based out of Boise. Right. I got a call from the GM and he gave me an opportunity to go work there. And that was a great learning experience as well for basketball, just in the sense that minor league, there's no job description for minor league. I was in the front office, but like literally you're doing marketing, selling season tickets, on court promotions, coaches calling me saying he needs another body for practice. I mean, it literally, you're doing everything. And then I got another friend that talk about going in a totally different direction. I had another friend that after about 9 months of that said, hey, you know, do you want to be you want to do some sales and I think you'd kill it as a financial advisor. And it would give you the time. At the time, my brother was working, doing some AAU stuff. And said, my brother's like, listen, we could really get involved with this. I think there's some opportunity here with AAU, which is kind of, this was in probably 2002 or three. There's a lot of opportunity here. I think there's some for camps, clinics, teams, whatever. My brother's really got a great business mind. And I was like, I think I can get the players. And so I took a totally different job that allowed me to really dive headfirst into Select, into AAU, and getting into coaching that way. Which then is when the light went off once we got started. And I was like, okay, I found what I want to do for the rest, you know, for literally the rest of my life. So that was kind of my coaching journey to get started. Anyways, that was a long story.
No, that was a great story because it gives us a really good perspective on how you got to where you are, or at least where you started on that road to get where you guys are with Select today. So, tell me why or how you came to realize that AAU part of it was what you really were going to dive into, and that was going to be part of it. Because obviously, you knew right away that college coaching with the travel and the family. We all know that anybody who's been around college coaching, you know, it's a grind. I mean, you're spending lots and lots of time in the office and it takes a lot of travel and it's a challenge. And we've talked to coaches at lots of levels that have expressed that as well. So what was it about jumping onto the AAU side of it that really captured you and made you think, hey, I can make a go of this?
I think one was, okay, so my favorite part of coaching is training. And so I really love the fact that when I coach, I can train. Like tonight, I'm working with 15 guys and I can train them, me and a couple of my other guys. And we can train them. Like, right, you can fix the, you know, you can fix the issues, you know, to make, have them improve, work on their weaknesses, improve their strengths, et cetera. That was one thing I felt like I could do at a, with a younger level. And so that was one thing that was a big deal. The other, I think, was just, again, I could, it was an opportunity that I knew that myself and my brother and all the kids my age, there wasn't really AAU. It was more like, hey, do you want to throw something together and go play in a tournament someplace? I was like, we can organize this. We can organize this and put these kids from a small area, which we are, on a bigger stage to see, to help them get scholarships. Because let's face facts. Nobody's going to come to, you know, such and such high school in Idaho to watch one kid play basketball. We need to get our best players and take them to them. And I'm not just talking Division I. I'm talking all levels, right? NAIA, D2, D3, junior colleges, everything. And so I really saw that could be our avenue. And to be quite frank, we got going, and then we'd have some success, and then we'd get a roadblock. We'd have fix the roadblock, have more success. And again, we can dive more into that stuff if you want to, but so we just kept trying to expand and get better, because what happened really was my brother and I got super competitive, and we still are, in a great way, in a very controlled, not like competitive with our kids. I mean, like, let's get better. How can we get better? And finding solutions to making kids better. So that's what I want. That's what I realized was, and I could do it right in my, you know, home area, and impact the kids in the area that I care about, which is where we get most of our players, in the Northwest.
Makes a lot of sense. I think the player development piece is something that there's some coaches that they live and die for the X's and O's piece of it. And then there's other guys that live for that player development and watching a player grow and improve and get better. And I think coaches tend to gravitate to probably one or the other that they like more. And it's great that you were able to find the piece of it that made sense for you and got you excited to be doing what you were doing. Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps, and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more. You mentioned the roadblocks. I think that's something that is interesting to me, in a sense of when you guys started back in 2002, 2003, as you said a couple times, AAU really was not what it is today. So anybody who's a parent of a high school athlete today, if you were the parent of a high school athlete in 2003, what you were looking at and what it was is something completely different. So give me a roadblock or two that you guys ran into as you were trying to build this up into what it's become today. And at the same time, as AAU basketball was kind of developing around you, so the environment was developing, and then you were trying to develop your own business within that environment. So just talk about some of the challenges that you ran into.
Well, I think that, so in from the area that we, I'll start with this. We only had one team back then. So, and we had one team playing, one or two teams playing in the summer. Now we have 17 teams playing spring, summer, and fall. And what happened was, essentially, we get the kids together and we would play in our pool play. And we, you know, one thing about our area is we get gritty, tough kids. And so, you know, we would play in our pool and pool triple J in front of no coaches. And then we get an opportunity to go play against some great team, and we get destroyed. But what would happen is I'd watch our kids and we get down 25 at halftime, and then we couldn't come back to the, but the, as they were competing throughout the game, they were getting better. They were understanding, oh, that's the angle I got to take and whatever else. And so we sat down and said, all right, enough is enough after a couple of years. We need to get younger teams. We need to play long, you know, more year round. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
They needed to get exposed to this earlier so that when they're 17 years old, they're not going, oh my gosh, that kid crawled up in me. I don't know how to get him off of me. if that happens when you're 14, and now I can bring you back to wherever we're at and say, all right, let's work on how that happened, why it happened, you know, that way we can now compete. So we're getting these younger guys and now they're getting better, right? They're getting better. Our development's happening. So yes, there is a lot of other teams in the Valley, but they're seeing our kids develop and get better faster. So they're now, mom and dad are going, why am I got my son playing for this team? Yeah, he's playing with a couple better players, but he's not getting the development this other kid is getting, and he's catching and passing my kid. So I'm going to go sign him up for Select instead. This is a better option for me. And so those were our roads box. And now we're not in pool triple Z anymore. We're in, you know, double D. And I'm going, all right, so now we're getting better pool games and we're beating them. And we're still competing when we get against the high upper echelon teams, but we're not beating them. And that's when, I don't know, probably about, geez, I can't remember how long ago it was. It's probably 10 years ago, 8 years ago. We had a kid named Riley Bradshaw. Riley was out of a small town in Montana, and we mostly up to this point only had Idaho kids. And Riley was highly touted. He'd already committed to Utah State, so he's a great player. And my wife's from Montana, so I know the lay of the land. I knew a lot of people. So I went over there and visited with him, and we got him to come play with us. Well, now we've got this point guard that's a high-level Division I point guard. I had that year a couple other Division I guys, and now all of a sudden we're like on the big stage. And we're winning. We're beating these teams, right?
Call ended.
Now we're in Montana, right? And these kids that saw what we did that summer and we're competing at a higher level. And I'm not saying we just like go out and win the tournament, but we're competing on a national level now. And then at all levels, our 15s, 16s, and 17s, now we've got Montana kids that are calling us and saying, hey, we want to be a part of this. So now we're getting even bigger, a bigger footprint, and we're getting better players. And then I get a kid named Cody Kelly that was a Division I player out of Wyoming. Same thing happens with that. And this is all happening over 17, 18, 20 years. But now we're getting all the best, better players coming our way. And we're going longer. We're training harder. We're doing a lot of video. So because kids aren't living in the area, but we're like, here's a lot of skills we need to work on. Here's what we're going to be anyways. So the roadblocks, we just kept saying, okay, how are we going to get better? How are we going to figure out ways to beat these teams that are just, quite frankly, bigger, stronger, and faster than we are? And we said, we're going to do it by playing harder. Now we're matching up to their talent and then really playing team basketball, motion concepts, playing our style of ball, and them going, geez, I can't guard them, you know? As a team, they're just moving the ball too fast and they're doing, you know, so that's kind of how it all came to be, to this point. So sorry for that long explanation, but I would say it takes time training. And then again, we all know this, you got to get some Jimmies and Joes, right?
Absolutely. So what does your development program look like today? So if I'm part of one of your better teams at the high school level, what is my spring, summer look like in terms of how practices are set up, how individual skill development is set up? What's my travel schedule? Just how do you guys get things organized to best benefit your players?
It's really hard. So during the school year, it's very difficult just because we do carry such a big footprint. So we try to provide a lot of videos. We try to provide a lot of audio and video using the technology so that they can work on their own. I don't expect a kid to fly to Boise, Idaho every other week from Missoula, Montana to get better. But I do expect them to continue to train and improve and work hard on their game. And so I think essentially that's how, you know, if they're out of town, like what we're doing right now is once, twice a week, we'll do. So tonight I've got these guys for an hour and a half. I love kids that play multiple sports. So if they're playing football, they're playing, you know, whatever, do it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Fit us in, find time, get off your video games and find time to work out or come in or whatever. But we've got plenty of workouts you can reference. But like tonight, I'll work them out for probably 45 minutes and then we'll let them play the last 45 minutes with instruction in between games, instructing, pulling guys aside, throwing my arm around them. Hey, you know, on that one where you got the ball picked, you know, think about hesitating here and going, you know, on that one, you got to make sure you're boxing him out. He's a great rebounder, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, it starts with this. All the workouts in the world, a lot of kids now, they just, I got a workout guy. And the ones that really get good are the ones that get a workout and then they want to go work out on their own, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
those are the ones that I, over time, I see the most amazing results with. Or I give them five new things to work on tonight. But then they spend the time on their own. It's not me making them. It's they're like, yeah, I want to get better. I'm going to go get in the gym. So I'm giving them some tools, but they're the ones that are going and using them, you know?
That's such a great point, because I think so often parents, players are misinformed about what it takes to really be great. And they think that, hey, if I spend an hour with trainer X once a week, that suddenly I'm going to be transformed into some kind of great player. And I think your point of saying, I give them the tools, I give them some things to work on, and then they go and do that on their own. I mean, to me, that's the secret formula. It's not a secret, but that's the formula is, look, you get coaching from someone who knows what they're talking about, someone who can guide you in the right direction, and then says, okay, these are the things that you need to improve on, or these are the things that are your strengths that we can make even better. And now you go to the gym, or you go out on your driveway, or whatever it is, and you put the time in to improve and get better. And as you said, for your geography, the way you guys are situated, yeah, you can't fly a kid cross country three times a week to come and work out with you, but you can get them the tools that they need in order to put that work in on their own. And when they do, you're going to see the kind of results that it sounds like you're seeing with your guys. When did you and your brother have to start expanding beyond the two of you as the only guys coaching teams? Because obviously when you start out, you don't need a whole staff of coaches, and it's easy to kind of have quality control because you know what you're going to do and how you're going to teach it and what you're going to do. But obviously as you expand, it becomes more of a challenge to make sure you have the right people in place that have the same philosophy as you do and are teaching the game in the same way that you want it taught. So how did you go about the expansion process and the hiring of coaches to make sure that what you guys were all about continued to expand your culture?
Well, I think we've always, our big thing is one coach. I try not to coach more than one team. So we've always, you know, if we had five teams, we'd have five coaches. And over the years, just been super lucky, super blessed to get the guys that we've gotten. Because we've been getting a lot of great high school coaches, guys that really want to put in, you know, get extra reps and work with kids. We've had a heck of a good time with NAIA, like head or assistant coaches, because they aren't under the same constraints as at the Division I or Division II level, where they can coach. They can come in and they can run their program. If you're an NAIA assistant coach that really wants to be a long-term coach, that description of that guy more than likely is a young guy that has a ton of energy that, you know, wants to work his way up the ranks, but also hasn't been able the opportunity to like call his own timeouts or, you know, get the experience of drawing up a play, you know, with 7 seconds left to go in the half or the game. So they love it because one, they get to get out and recruit on our budget, on our dime, but they get to like work with their players, draw up the plays, call the timeouts and all those experiences. So, and I've just being around a long time, you know how it is. You just meet a lot of good people and you foster those relationships and you'll just know like that guy right there would be phenomenal, coaching, you know, a 16U team. He would be so good. And, you know, our road trips, you got to picture this, you know, on a charter bus with 17 coaches, all talking hoops. So you're sharing a ton of new ideas. Because again, our philosophy is 8 players, 1 coach. And that coach is responsible for his 8 players, getting them. We all stay in the hotels. A lot of times we bus together from spot to spot, like in the summers. And so we're together and we're, like I said, his kid, they're getting them from spot to spot, keeping them safe, but teaching them the game, working with them, you know, teaching them the finer points, you know, all of those things. So, we expanded pretty early that way. But we did get a guy named Andy Harrington who's done a high school coach, has done a heck of a job. They won state last year at Middleton. That does work for us full time. And then we just got a guy named R.C. Nugent that's from, actually, he's from, I don't know how we got it done, but he's from Baltimore, Maryland. He knew Andy through a prep school that they had worked at for a while 5 years ago. And I called him and I got him to come this way too. So anyways, we've been really lucky. We've just been around a lot of really good coaches, a lot of coaches that are head coaches at the D2 NAI level or assistant D1 coaches. But we got them when they were 25. You know what I mean? Now they're 30 and just killing it. So, it's fun to watch those guys get, you know, reaping a lot of awesome rewards through the game too. So
absolutely. No question about that. How do you guys approach the relationship with your players' high school coaches? Cause I know that's always, I don't want to say controversial, but there's always sort of this rivalry out there between AAU and high school basketball. And I think the best AAU programs and the best high school programs figure out a way to make sure that they're both in it for the good of the player. So just describe how you guys approach that part of the relationship.
100%. I mean, like I told you, my background from my growing up was high school, and there shouldn't be a conflict with this. If everybody's looking at a calendar and saying, here's the times when we're going to work with the kids, here's the time when you're going to work with the kids. Our ultimate goal, any decision we make is first and foremost, is what's the best thing for the kid? Literally, that's number one. We talk to a ton of high school coaches and try and get their input on what's going on, what they want the kids to improve on. And like I said, we'll work with the, like July, around here again, in the states that we work with, now I'm not going to speak for every state because I don't know how they all operate their calendars, but here, you know, high school season's over. The spring, they're restricted on how much time they can spend with them. It's a great time for them to work with their high school and work with us. And I always tell the guys, listen, if there's a conflict with an open gym or a workout with us in your high school, see you next week. Go work with your high school. And so we find there really isn't a conflict. The guys are working hard. They're working out with both. And that open communication makes it really clean. And our goal is to help a kid play, get some more exposure, and return them to their high school team a better basketball player. And that's it. Not undermine or undo anything that coach is trying to do with their kids. But just, again, just try and make them better. And then, and just give them some more positive experiences. Cause I know there's so many great high school coaches around that I know they're giving them a great experience, but they are limited. The craziest part about this is they are so much more, high school coaches, so much more limited with regards to a player's time than a AAU coach. So, which to me is backwards if you think about it. I mean, that's a certified high school coach that's probably also a teacher that's been totally had a background check on him, whatever else. But some average Joe, a felon off the street, can work as much as they want with any kid anytime.
Yep.
You explain to me how that's,
it really is.
How that's okay. Like it's kind of ridiculous.
It really is a backward system in that regard. There's no question about that. I know we're pushing up against your time limit. I want to ask you one final question and then give you an opportunity to share how people can find out more about what you're doing. So my final question for you is when you think about being, and you guys talk to parents all the time of high school players, if you had one piece of advice for the parent of a high school basketball player who had ambitions of playing college basketball, what would be your one piece of advice?
Ooh, that's a great question. I'd start with this. And it's hard. It's really hard as a parent, I think, to do this. You have to find people in that world, in the basketball world, if that's what it is. If you're a football player, it's a football world, whatever, blah, blah, blah. For the basketball world, you have to find someone that's telling you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. Because I get so many times I'm around a kid and he's like, well, I was with this guy and he told me this and this. And I'm like, what facts does he have to back what he just told you? What experience does he have that's giving you that information? And then I think that just seeking upfront, defined roles allow for everybody, player and parent, to have a great experience with the game. And what I mean by that is I have players all the time that I sit down with that play on my top, top team that I'm like, your job, you're a guy that is a 3-and-D guy. If you will get time on this team, if you play great defense, dive on every loose ball and make some open threes. But if you're trying, if you take a turnaround jump shot or whatever, I literally can't play you. And I'm telling that to the kid and I'm telling that to the parent. And I'm looking the parent in the eye. And if they're fine with that, when it happens in a game, there's no beef, if that makes sense. Do you get what I'm saying?
No, like, it makes total sense.
Johnny didn't get to shoot. You're letting little Johnny shoot it more than my son. Why is that? I told you 2 weeks ago. This is his role.
we already had this discussion, right?
Yes. We have crossed this bridge. So if you don't like it, I told you that's the only way he's going to get to play on this team. If he takes shots away from my top scorers, then I can't play him. And I've told him, look, I was a 3-and-D guy all through college. I wasn't. If I took more than three shots a game, they would have never let me play. but I had a job, and I said, no matter how you slice it, 50% of the game is played on defense. So I need you to be an elite defender. You're going to get to play a lot, and you're still going to get a chance to play college basketball. I promise you. And so it's seeking that truth, because, you know, but it's really hard because parents, they just want to hear what they want to hear. They're not out. A lot of times they're not seeking truths. They're seeking feel goods, right? And here's the deal. 90% of all parents are good people that are awesome. It's just, you know, right. I think we all have a problem with those 1 out of 10 where you're like, you know, again, you're seeking, you want me to tell you what you want to hear, and you want me to tell you that your son's a star, and you want me to tell you that this and that. Listen, the players I've had that were stars, I didn't have to tell them they were a star. You want to know why? They already knew they were the star. They don't have to go pound their chest. Listen, dude, you can take worse shots than that guy. You want to know why? Because you make them. I'm sorry, you don't get to take that same shot.
That is so true. That's a great piece of advice. I think parents being realistic is always a challenge. And when you can have those honest conversations, I think it heads off a ton of problems. Before we get out, Clint, I want to give you a chance to share, how can people find out more about Select, what you guys are doing, whether you want to share just your website or social media, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Awesome. Well, my brother's going to hate this when I say this, but selectbasketballusa.com. I do zero social media. So I know, I think it's so.
Your Twitter is Select Hoops USA. @ Select Hoops USA.
And Instagram is something else. Again, my brother's going to kill me. Cause he's
marketing. That's all right. We'll get it all in the show notes. Everybody can find it at selectbasketballusa.com. You can find everything. Great. They got all the links despite Clint's lack of knowledge on this. You will be able to find them easily however you want. So again, Clint, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us tonight. Really appreciate your time. It was a pleasure getting to know more about what you guys are doing out there in the Pacific Northwest and building your program and just all the great things that you're doing to try to help kids and make the game better, which is really what this is all about. So thank you for your time. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.